Good evening, everyone. Meeting will come to order. Clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. Members, we have the minutes of the April 24th meeting before us. Are there any corrections, additions, or changes to those minutes? Seeing none, Representative Abler moves approval of the minutes.
So moved.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Okay, members, this evening we have House File 4162, the budget bill. Chair will move that House File 4162 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. And members, 4162 is really just the base bill for the amendment. And so the chair will move the DE1-2 amendment. And members, this is to just basically put the bill in the shape that it needs to be put to discuss. And so I would hope you would support that amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of the DE1-2 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Members, this is the deficiency budget bill. There is no policy that I'm aware of that is in the bill, except to the extent that it is attached to a particular appropriation or in some ways deals with some money. I want to briefly talk about the rules, members, because I have had people ask me about that. I believe that this is something that we can do under the rules. We have had deficiency bills before. We have passed a budget resolution, which this bill would have to comply with, and having no more than $88.355 million in net spending, less the money being transferred in from the tax relief account. Members, the target resolution that we've passed applies to the omnibus finance bills. I guess in my view, and I've checked with the chief clerk and others, if we do not have an omnibus finance bill, the target we set for that particular omnibus finance bill wouldn't apply. And so you will note that in some cases we're spending a little bit more or a little bit less in some of the areas in the spreadsheet than were being spent by a particular committee. Members, I have the spreadsheet. I don't know if I need to run through every single line item in it, but let me briefly go through at least the larger line items. We have $5 million for Rochester Higher Education Program. This is a continuation of what we did last year. And again, members, if you look at this bill, in putting this bill together, I've tried to put together as a bill that deals with deficiencies, deals with emergency situations, deals with changes where we need to make a change because of some error in some past law that we passed, deals with a compliance with a federal mandate, deals with some sort of situation like that, that if it isn't a deficiency now would have a good chance of becoming a deficiency of some kind in the future or be an emergency item of some kind. As far as the appropriations go. With that, members, I mentioned the Rochester project, a couple of the other projects in the bill of note. We are reestablishing the Boxing Commission. I find it rather interesting that the smallest expenditure we have in the bill, $50,000, actually accounts for 20-some percent of the size of the bill. But this is an issue that, as I understand it, when we got rid of the Boxing Commission some years ago, there was the ability to rely on boxing commissions at the national or other state levels to do this work. That has since vanished, and so there is a need for us to reestablish this particular commission in order to keep the regulation that we need in that area. Most of the money in this bill does go for funding deficiencies in the sex offender and mentally ill and dangerous area, or in salary supplements related to those areas. We have, as you can see in the spreadsheet, $31 million for the shortfall for mentally ill and dangerous, $34 million for the sex offender area. We have $7.5 million for the salary supplement and state-operated services. We have $24.8 million for the salary supplement and corrections. And members, on that subject, I would mention that while we have not fully funded those areas, if you added them all up, we are funding roughly 90% of what those areas requested, and it would seem to me that 90% would be something that they should be able to get by with. We have some other items that you can note in the Health and Human Services area as well. that are in the center of the spreadsheet. We do have $1 million for the pandemic influenza preparedness. Members, this was an item that was originally funded out of the Health Care Access Fund. It's been funded into the general fund here. We have no money for Health Care Access Fund expenditures in this bill. I'm trying to keep that out of the bill. And in fact, to the greatest extent possible, I've tried to keep non-general fund items out of the bill. We do have in one area some significant non-general fund items, and that is the TANF refinancing of $29,595,000. We have about $5.8 million in veterans' homes expenditures. We have some dollars for veterans, the largest portion of which is special aid to veterans who have been called up to serve in the Iraq War and are experiencing hardship, financial hardship with their families or businesses. You turn to the second page, again, you see the salary supplement. You see that's offset by about $14.7 million in bed savings. There's about $10 million of water quality initiatives that are necessary to comply with the Federal Clean Water Act. You will note that those are all one-time appropriations and have no policy language attached to them. And with that, members, I guess I would, that is the brief review of the financial issues that are in the bill. Members, there's one amendment that I would like to add on at this point. I think I'll have a page hand that out. It hasn't been passed out. That's the A13 amendment. Let me describe that while it's being passed out. It's $200,000 that was in the Environment Finance Bill that did pass this committee to keep some federal Corps of Engineer campsites open up in northern Minnesota. This, I think, is an emergency situation. Those campgrounds are going to be closed if we do not take some sort of action. We are in negotiations with the federal government to take over the management of those campsites, but this is the identical language that passed out of this committee, or was, excuse me, that passed out of the Environment Finance Committee and the Environment Finance Bill and was before this committee and funds $200,000 out of the Natural Resources Fund for operation of these recreational sites. And members, I do think that this meets the criteria of a emergency type of funding that we need to have in this bill, and so I would move the A13 amendment. Any discussion to that amendment? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the A13 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The A13 amendment is adopted.
I would like to not answer.
Members, is there a discussion of the bill? Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do think deficiency is an apt name for this bill. We're going to be very deficient in preparedness for pandemic flu, and Mr. Chairman,
Representative Wagenius.
Yes, I am wondering why you want us to be so deficient, and so I, one of the things I did before I was came over here was ask a page if they would just print out the governor's recommendation, which was for $10.5 million each year for the next 3 years, and it looks like you're doing $1 million each year for the next 3 years. What is Minnesota going to lose in being prepared for flu with these with your budget?
Okay. Excuse me, could you repeat that question, Representative Wagenius? I couldn't hear you.
Okay. It started by saying I think the deficiency bill is an apt name for this bill because we're very deficient in planning for a pandemic flu. The governor asked for $10.5 million for each year for the next 3 years, and I just brought his request just to refresh our memories. And you're doing $1 million a year There's no question that scientists are expecting birds in the United States sometime this summer or fall that will have the flu. And so I just wonder what Minnesotans are going to be losing because we are not, what is it we're not funding?
Well, let me start, Representative Wagenius, by saying that we already do have a public health system that has been preparing for this particular event, so it's not like we haven't spent any money on it at all. I think there are some limits as to just what you can spend money on in this area. I mean, some people have suggested we need to lay in huge vaccine stockpiles of Tamiflu vaccine, even though, at least from what I see, there's a lot of uncertainty as to whether that vaccine would be of any use whatsoever in the bird flu. But maybe I can call upon Representative Bradley, who has worked on this issue further in the Health and Human Services area, to discuss this. Representative Bradley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, first and foremost, on a bipartisan level, and I've heard repeatedly the choice to use the Health Care Access Fund is not a popular choice. And I share in that, Representative Huntley's expressed that. I think almost our entire health committee was very concerned about that. And this now is using general fund, which is, I think, the right sources. When it comes down to it, when you see how much general fund is actually legitimately available, we're pretty limited. So that's a constraining factor. The other factor, I think Chairman Knobloch is sort of into, we are talking about a risk that nobody knows for sure, and I know that ranges all the way from certain people who say there's no question about it next year to people who say it'll never happen. And you know what? No matter how much we spend, we don't have hospital capacity. We are going to be in an emergency. We have pretty strong emergency preparedness. A lot of it is local, and when I travel around the state and I talk to my own health department people, they have in place at least the kind of the emergency plans, the places that would be used, all the kinds of things like that. So there is a little bit of calculated risk. I mean, nobody can put a probability. Some would say the probability in the United States is lower because of the way our livestock, especially our poultry, is very carefully protected. We don't know yet because we haven't had the mutation that makes it a human-to-human. So this is, I guess what you could say, is about as reasonable a compromise with the resources available, and certainly doesn't mean that there's not attention. There's lots and lots of attention, lots of emergency preparedness. A lot of emergency preparedness is appropriate regardless of what the actual effect is. There's lots of things that could happen, but I think, to be honest with you, this is what we can afford at this point, and we hope that we will never even have to spend any of it.
Representative Wagenius.
Representative Bradley, there's just two notions I want to get back to. One, you're talking about our emergency preparedness, and I know my county, which is Hennepin, has stated that they're not prepared. So if the biggest county in the state is not prepared, that doesn't make me feel easy about this. But part of what is in here, what the governor asked for, pretty basic stockpiling, not just flu vaccines, but basic stockpiling of resources that's in his, what he requested. And testimony in your committee was that even with the $10.5 million, you wouldn't have masks for healthcare providers. The very basic of basics. So if I were a health care provider and we didn't have those stockpiles, I'm not sure I'd want to go to work. But the second thing you alluded to is our poultry, it may be protected, I suspect at this point, better than our citizens. But we can't sequester wild, you know, ducks and wild birds. They're the ones that spread the flu, not our poultry. So I am feeling very uneasy about the notion that because you don't want to appropriate any more money out of the general fund, that we are making the choice not to be prepared, given the fact that the governor said we need to be prepared, and our counties aren't prepared. They're expecting something to come from the state. It is not a... I mean, it's...
we're taking a risk on behalf of my citizens that I don't think what they would appreciate at this point.
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair, I don't have a whole lot more to add to it because there's no question there's a risk. There's lots of risk around us. On the other hand, I don't think that I would certainly propose that we take money and put sexual predators on the street or dangerous and mental illness situations on the street. So, as I said, a large measure of it is look down through the list, look at where the limited resources in a non-budget year, and if you want to suggest we take it from someplace else, I don't know where that would be for myself.
Representative Borghese, if I can ask you, you pass out the governor's recommendation. I've heard much from your side in people not wanting to take money out of the health care access fund, such as the governor did. I mean, this is, I don't want to exactly put you on the spot on this, but I guess, generally speaking, do you think the idea, since you passed out the governor's proposal, of taking $10.5 million out of the health care access fund is a good idea?
Representative Knobloch, you're asking for me to make a false choice, and I'm not going to make that false choice. This is a basic public health issue. The health care access fund was for a different matter. We should be looking to general fund money, perhaps our reserves. That's your job, but to say we have to live within these constraints that we're setting up, and public, you won't be safe. It's okay. We're making this choice because we want to set up this false walls. I just don't buy that. And I don't think the public would buy that either.
Well, Representative Bouguinius, I guess firstly, I don't believe that we need to spend $10.5 million in this area. Secondly, I wouldn't have put you on the spot by asking you about it, except that you did pass out the governor's recommendation. And being you passed it out, I've heard, much from your side saying they didn't think that they wanted money from the health care access fund, but being you passed out the governor's recommendation, I thought perhaps you did. Representative Bouguinius.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, I don't mean to be angry. That is not my nature. But this is a serious issue, and to play it with what account it comes out of or doesn't come out of is not the issue I brought up. The issue I brought up is the governor's staff seems to think that we need $10.5 million in order for the CD to be prepared. It's that question I am asking. Are there things that you think that we don't need to be prepared? Do you disagree with the Department of Health? Let's start from the question, do we want to be prepared? I mean, minimally prepared. I know we can't be perfectly prepared. That's one question. And secondly, what are the things you think we should forego in not being prepared? Then we can talk about where the money comes from.
Again, Representative Greenis, I was just asking the question because you had passed out the governor's recommendation. Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenis, I'm not saying that this is the absolute measure, but at least that ought to give you some measure of we're not the only ones. Even though the Senate has significantly higher spending, they're only setting aside $2.3 million. And as a matter of fact, they're not putting it really in almost any of the things that the governor proposed. They're putting it all really in Tamiflu. So I think there is some difference of opinion about what we have for priorities and how much we spend. So even the Senate is seeing that we can't do it all.
Representative Bouguinius.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bradley, I'm not a Senate member. I'm a House member. I am responsible for my vote. I'm responsible to look out for the public health of my constituents. I am bringing this up and trying to get us to discuss what the ups and downs are of not funding the recommendations from the governor for pandemic flu preparedness. And I say that more specifically because in late fall, the Secretary of Health and Human Services came to Minnesota and essentially said to Minnesota, you're on your own, state. The governor
I mean, he's out there saying, I accept that responsibility.
How would you? No.
And so, for us to just drop it,
maybe you'd run out and get it,
does not set well with me, because we haven't even had a discussion. This is Ways and Means. I want to know why we dropped it, and what are we foregoing in public health for our citizens?
Representative Bradley.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to prolong, because there's no question about this is some judgment involved, but I don't want you to think this is sort of casual dropping it. We held a hearing in our committee even before the beginning of session, and we spent almost 2 to 3 hours on this issue. I take it very seriously. But the experts will tell you that we have sort of, at this point, in my estimation of the best judgment, we have a low probability of a high consequence kind of event. And when you have that, you do have to make some judgment about how much you invest, where are you today, what are your resources, how are you prepared. We can never be perfectly prepared. I think you even acknowledge that. We did point out the fact, of course, that the source of the funds in the government proposal is one that was not very popular, and that's just reality. And then when you look at the budget that we have, I think we have made, I mean, $1 million to me is still significant in a non-budget year. So we are placing priority. Is it enough for what you like? It may not be.
Representative Tamar. Oh, I guess he's not there anymore. While we're waiting for him, I did, I guess I have one technical amendment to make. Page 13, line 16, change 277,000 to 227,000. So members, I'd move that page 13, line 16 be 227,000 instead of 277,000. Any discussion of that amendment? Seeing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Discussion. Representative Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair, we are not prepared, Representative Bradley is correct. We don't know if this is going to happen or not happen. How we treat our poultry, I don't think has much to do with what will happen, because if it mutates any place in the world, it'll be here 3 weeks later. We saw that with the SARS outbreak, started in mainland China, ended up in Toronto with a high death rate from those that got it. I mean, this is a serious issue, and I don't think the public has been informed about how serious it is. We had testimony from the Department of Health that if it acted like the 1917 flu, that 175,000 people in Minnesota would get it, and those 175,000 would need to be hospitalized. And folks, we've only got 16,000 hospital beds. And, you know, where are we going to put them? The Department of Health said that 30,000 Minnesotans will die if it's like the 1917 flu. And I happen to have read the Department of Health and the Public Safety Department's emergency preparedness, and in only two places did they ever even mention the two most important things that need to be protected in this state. And those aren't doctors, they aren't nurses, they aren't emergency drivers, they aren't cops. The two groups that need to be protected are the people that run the electric power plants and the people that run the water and sewer plants. And if we don't have a strategy, which we don't, on how we're going to keep the power on and keep the water flowing in both directions, it won't be just people that have the flu that die, it will be other people. And there is very little plan on how we're going to deal with that. And they're expecting someplace between a third and a half the people to get sick. And if you're trying to run a plant someplace and half your employees are sick and can't come to work, and if there's another 25% of your employees that are too afraid to come to work, folks, if we don't have a plan on how to keep the water flowing and the power on, a lot more people than the 30,000 will die, and we don't have a plan today.
Representative Carlson.
Listen, on this issue, so I'll field anyone else. So I wanted to go to the LCMR for a moment.
Okay. I just want to go back to Representative Wagenius then.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's not only that we don't have a plan. The last time I looked at the health department's website, they said, well, we think we'll have a month to 6 months before we have to, you know, once we know about it, that we have to be ready. Well, that flies in the face of current science. I mean, their website is really outdated. And I looked at DNR's website. I mean, we won't even go there. But you look at other states where they are preparing their citizens, and by telling them what to do, they're preparing their hunters, telling them what gloves to use and all sorts of things. We're not there. And so it disturbs me no end that we're not even being serious about it. We can be serious about a baseball stadium, but not serious about public health. What's going on here? It's very troubling to me.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I was glad to see that there was some LCMR funding here. Now, I happen to serve on LCMR, and we had some discussion at our last meeting, and my recollection was that the need for administration was a higher number. And I guess my basic question is this number adequate to get LCMR through this period of adjustment at 275?
Well, let me speak to that, Representative Carlson. You know, we have a bill sitting in committee to do the LCMR reform. I don't recall the exact number of it. But I guess I felt that to fully fund the $550,000 that was requested before we even acted on that bill was rather premature. At the same time, I understand that there are issues in terms of additional money being needed beyond the current budget that's been appropriated, even if we never acted on the bill at all. And so I felt that we should appropriate some without appropriating the entire amount since we hadn't acted on the bill. And I guess in my mind, certainly if we pass the bill and authorize the other LCMR reform bill, it would be my intention and expectation that we would fully fund that amount. But I guess I felt the $275,000 was an amount that would get us to the end of this calendar year, would provide for the continued funding that LCMR would need underneath any circumstance, and would seem to be something that did not prejudge the other bill passing while still providing some additional money that was needed.
Yeah, and what we needed was funding for the bridge, and you're saying the 275 will bridge us until the end of the calendar year?
Yes.
The problem began, if I recall, like on March 1st, March 15th, or something like that. And so this will take us through the entire calendar year.
I believe so, Representative Carlson. The total request was $550,000 for FY07. And so by providing half of that, I'm assuming that that gets us to the end of the calendar year, or at least pretty close.
Okay, I'll, I may want to talk with you more on that. I just want to make sure that that's going to be enough to do the bridging.
Sure. Okay, Representative Fulbert.
Mr. Chairman, we've had a couple of conversations, and I know that people from the LCMR staff are in the audience as well. I think this is an important issue that we need to solve, and solve in a timely fashion. Right now, with the governor vetoing the second part of the appropriation for 2007, that staff by right should have been laid off on March 15th. Because going from March 15th to the end of the fiscal year would take up their severance and all the other things that unemployment compensation costs. They've been carrying on since March 15th with if we don't do this the full biennial year the next year, that becomes a general obligation fund. It does come back to us if we don't do that. We got competent staff in there. It's a very small staff. They have lost two people already because, you know, they're out uncertainty, and I can't blame them. I don't necessarily fault you for not wanting to put it all in there. But I do think that it's extremely important that the bill that's in the committee here have a very timely resolution of it. It's a reform bill that was passed through, adopted unanimously by, after my wife said, why do you have to have 13 meetings to do this? I think it has bipartisan support. It's supported by the governor's office. It's supported by the chair of the study committee. Like my co-chair was Dave Zittner from Duluth, who is just the chair of the Ducks rally outside on Saturday. He has expressed concern about that because we are literally holding some very competent staff members up without assurance that their job will continue. And I don't think that's really fair. So I would hope that if you put the 275 in now, that at least you will, in the very near future, give the whole bill a hearing and move it forward in a timely fashion. I know the governor is interested in that as well.
And I guess let me just say, I was on the LCMR for a couple of years. It certainly does have competent staff. I know the people have been sort of left up in the air, and that's why I felt it was important, even though we hadn't yet acted on the other bill. And, of course, we've had a lot of other pressing issues that have come before the committee, and expect there will be a lot of bills we'll be hearing once we get through this budget process. I felt it was important to have something put in here so that we at least showed a bridge, while at the same time not prejudging what was going to happen with the other bill. Representative Carlson.
Sure. I just had a very quick and informal conversation with some of the folks from LCMR, and there would continue to be some issues, and so I'd appreciate it as an opportunity, maybe as the bill moves forward, rather than tonight, to visit with you some more about that, to make sure that we are making the appropriate bridge. They have lost a couple of staff people already, and one of the issues as they move forward, they're going to be dealing with some issues, is to be at an appropriate staff level as well. So it's not only just bridging for employees that are still there, but to have them at full strength.
Be happy to talk further. Representative Rukavina.
Chair, could you, I see in the spreadsheet here that there's something for your district in Benton, Sherburne, and Stearns Counties, and then on page 24 of the bill, there's a rate increase for, I think it's nursing homes in Stearns and Sherburne and Benton. And are your nursing homes getting an increase and mine aren't, or what's going on in the bill here?
Well, this has really been an issue that Representative Heidrichen has been pushing more than me, Representative Rukavina. But the issue is that 2 years ago, and Representative Bradley may have more information than I do, but 2 years ago, we did pass this rate increase in the Omnibus Health and Human Services bill. And what it was is that the St. Cloud metropolitan area is the only Greater Minnesota Regional Center in the state that does not have the metro rate for its nursing homes. Duluth has it, Mankato has it, Rochester had it. This was seen as equity to move the St. Cloud area up, and there was apparently some language problem with that, so it didn't happen, and this corrects that inequity. And I guess let me refer to Representative Bradley, who can maybe add more to that.
Mr. I think you covered it fairly well. I believe as well that probably in your area, they already are based at the metro rates, if I recall, northeast Minnesota is. So this just caught up because the competitive area, I mean, I don't mean to go too much back, but this was the logic a couple of years ago when it was passed. The misunderstanding was the language we thought was going to apply it, and we were going to see the rate raised just to bring them up to the median metro rate. It turned out that it wasn't worded properly, and we've had a couple of years of consternation trying to figure out, and so that's why it's up down.
Representative Huntley, let me call on. Well, Representative Rukavina, go ahead. Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bradley, then, so is the $1.78 million is coming out of the general fund or whatever to pay for that increase, which is comparable then to the metro area St. Cloud moving up towards the metro area. And then I assume then you get a higher reimbursement from the federal government, right?
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair, yeah, this moves them to the median, and what you see there, of course, are only the state dollars, and that's matched by federal dollars.
So is this kind of like that deal you did to my mother, and then the rate goes up, so the private pay rate goes up, and so if the private pay rate goes up on these people, how much more does a nursing home and resident and private pay and Benton and Sherburne and Stearns County going to pay a day for this fee that doesn't go to them but goes through the state of Minnesota? Can you tell me that? Right in this bill, how much does the fee go up for a nursing home resident in those three counties a day?
Mr. Rupavina, I'm not sure. I mean, I suspect every time when we gave the nursing homes about a 4% increase for this current biennium, I suspect that you celebrated just like I celebrated and all of our nursing homes did. And, of course, that rate, it correspondingly is applied to the public or the private pay as well. But that's just a matter of helping them be able to keep up with their expense growth. So I'm not sure I understand any correlation to the...
Mr. Chair, and Representative Bradley, until a few years ago, you couldn't charge a person on private pay any more than a person on, what the rate was. And now...
Mr. Chairman, that still stands. Equalization still stands in Minnesota.
We picked up that rate, and because of it, there's this new rate or new charge, which was $5 and something a day for my mother. It was at 83 or 38, I can't remember, about $2,000 a year. But now what I'm saying is if you're kicking this rate up, and if it's going up, let's say, $14 a day in those three counties to match the metro rate, then are you telling me that a person on private pay is going to pay $14 a day times 365 days a year more?
Mr. Chair,
Representative
Rubin, I don't recall what the exact amount is, but whatever this turns out to be, the answer is yes, just like any time we give rate increases to nursing homes to help them keep up with expenses.
Wow.
And just, I suspect that if that person were going to a hospital year to year, they'd find out that it's more expensive in 2006 than it was in 2005 because the expenses have gone up. Same phenomenon.
Yeah, we don't have inflation in the state. Remember, you.
Well, you sure do if you're writing up the check.
You changed the law.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's not a type of comment that I think is necessary.
Okay.
Because Fina's argument that you don't have inflation is what the law is.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair and Representative, I didn't mean in disrespect. We were talking about private pay, and that's what I meant, was that the private pay person was writing out the check.
I didn't know.
Representative Hudley had his hand up. Let me call on Representative Hudley.
Mr. Chair, I have supported this thing 2 years ago and last year and this year. It simply allows the counties around St. Cloud to be treated just like all of St. Louis County. And have the same rates. Will that cause private pay people to pay a little more? Yes, that is true. But it will also mean significant raises to the people that work in those nursing homes, because that's where most of the money goes.
And members, let me just say again, as we looked at the criteria for putting things in this bill, one of them was correcting past errors or problems. This was something that did pass the legislature in 2004. There was a language problem, and so we're trying to correct that with this provision. Other discussion. Representative Osment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Chair, I'd like to return to the LCMR discussion. As you know, the governor vetoed the second year of the biennium of the LCMR funding, and that really puts us in kind of a bind, even though I believe the reason he vetoed it was for us to get the reform package brought forward. We now have that reform package. It's been to this committee for several weeks now, and we have not had an opportunity to hear that package and to move that forward. We're now getting towards the end of April. I'm starting to get very nervous because we know we have a deadline coming somewhere in the near future. None of us know exactly when that's going to occur. And if they do not get their administrative funding, then they would not only would they lose their jobs, there's no one to manage the LCMR accounts that are out there. We have significant monies that we're supposed to be continue our accountability processes for. And I'm also concerned that the dollars, because they're LCMR dollars from the corpus of the Environmental Trust Fund, they will start to default back to the Environmental Trust Fund corpus, and we lose those interest dollars. And they just become part of the future interest, which is significantly smaller than the dollars are in hand today. And so it's one thing to veto the dollars, another thing to hold the package. But if we don't get this package through and we would go sine die, we end up losing, potentially several million dollars that should be going towards environmental activities and projects around the state of Minnesota, not just the administrative dollars, but real environmental impact. And I would like to have some assurance, Mr. Chair, if you'll get that bill up as soon as we can here and get that thing moving.
Well, Representative Osmond, we have a lot of bills that we do need to get up soon, and we have had a lot of other bills we've had to march through this committee for one reason or another lately. So I guess I would be happy to talk to you, Representative Carlson, or anyone else about the LCMR issues that you're discussing, so to make sure that I'm totally familiar with them.
And because I believe that you really want to work to resolve this and get this whole process completed as quickly as possible, I'm not going to push the issue. I won't push the amendment that I have available to do that today, but I really think that we should have that discussion.
Well, thank you, Representative Osmond. Representative Paymar, I had called on you earlier and missed you, but you're back. Did you have a comment?
Well, I just have a question for you. I understood that this bill was not going to have any policy in it, and I'm just wondering why sections 31 and 32 on immigration are in the bill.
Sections 31 and 32 do have a fiscal effect of saving $2,374,000, Representative Paymar.
So basically, there can be policy in here as long as it has a fiscal impact, is what your criteria is.
Well, basically, if there is the kind of criteria for inclusion in the bill was we weren't taking straight policy issues, but if there was something on the spreadsheet that cost money or saved money and had policy language associated with it, then we felt, or at least it was my judgment, that policy language of some kind would be appropriate. Certainly, you can't just have a number in the bill. There has to be some sort of appropriation language. Similarly, if you are doing something that saves money, there often needs to be some sort of language that goes along with it, too, and these are two provisions that relate to that. Yeah. Representative Osmond.
Mr. Chairman, I just haven't thought about this before, and I'm wondering, in the environmental omnibus bill, we had the dollars actually spelled out with regard to LCMR as to where they would go, the several millions of dollars. And they're not in the deficiency fund. How do they get back on the table for discussion?
Representative Osmond, I have felt that you would be having, there's the game and fish bill, which I think is in this committee now. I felt that there would be another bill of some kind, either the LCMR bill or a related bill with other non-general fund items that were in the environment finance bill that would move forward through this committee. And putting this bill together to the greatest extent possible, I tried to stay away from non-general fund items. And so you will find that with few exceptions, there are only general fund items in this bill.
Yeah, I see that. I appreciate that information, Mr. Chair, because we were not informed or did not know that was the pathway we were supposed to be taking with regard to funding items that were non-general fund, and we will take action to follow that up.
Okay, and I will be happy to work with you to expedite that, Representative Osmond, because there are, when I looked at the Environment Finance Bill, there are certainly many other items in it that are non-general fund items that I think are very appropriate to pass and act upon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Solberg.
Can I express a little bit of concern to both yourself and to Representative Osmond, and that I would hope that the LCMR reform bill itself travels by itself with appropriation for the staff in it, and not have some of the other things that may be controversial on the vetoed bills as part of that. I hope that becomes a separate bill. One of the recommendations that we made from the study committee was that the LCMR be treated as a separate bill and not be other bills. So I would hope that we would have the opportunity to have two bills, one from the committee and one from that reform bill by itself.
I certainly don't have no objection to that. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the spreadsheet, the last page at the bottom, it talks about abortion reporting bill, House File 3258. Now, what does that have to do with this bill?
Representative Earhart, there is no abortion language in the bill. However, this spreadsheet basically reconciles this bill with other money bills that have passed this committee already. And you'll recall we did have the abortion reporting bill pass in here some time ago. It has a fiscal note of $116,000, and so it's shown on here. You know, in fact, if you look right above that, you'll see the unemployment insurance policy bill saved $200,000, so that's noted. The claims bill is not part of it, so that $64,000 is noted, as is the bonding bill and the earlier Medicare Part D bill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you're carrying $116,000 in here for the abortion reporting bill. Is that the...
No, Representative Earhart, it is not in this bill. This is, if you look at the bottom of the page, you'll see it says reconciliation to budget resolution at the top, below the sort of line that talks about what's in this bill. Okay. And that's just for members to be able to track what has already passed through this committee, which we have to count in reconciling this bill to the budget resolution. Other discussion to the bill. Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, I was trying to figure out your criteria for what goes in this bill. Is it a deficiency, if it's an emergency, or federal mandate? I'm trying to understand why a couple things are in here. One of them is on page 2 of the bill, section 4, the 218, the Biobusiness Alliance of Minnesota, nonprofit organization.
What is that? Is it deficiency, emergency, federal mandate? I don't think it's any of those. It's just a new program. So.
Maybe I can ask Representative Gunther, who authored that provision, to talk about that one.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, can you speak in your microphone and ask that question again?
Okay. I was trying to understand why on page 2 of the bill we're including the Biobusiness Alliance of Minnesota, the $467,000 there.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, because that is getting accountability for bioscience the way you've wanted it to be. It goes there and it takes bioscience a step further, and it commercializes it, if you want to say it, creates jobs with bioscience. And I think it is a missing piece from the ongoing bioscience initiatives that we've had.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Clark.
I guess that when I was originally asking the question, I was trying to figure out, is it a deficiency, an emergency, or a federal mandate, which are the criteria here? And it's promoting, you know, some business, bioscience business, but I'm trying to figure out which one of those categories it fits into.
I guess as I understood it, Representative Clark, it was something that was necessary to implement and coordinate some of the other appropriations and provisions that we have passed here over the last year. I could perhaps make the argument that you're making for the provision immediately below the one that you're referencing too.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this particular Biobusiness Alliance right now, I believe, is a private organization. I mean, privately funded organization, asking for public funds. If you look at the next program, there is a. If you're talking about the Youth Build program, that's something that
has. That's the one I'm talking
not
about.
It's not a new program, and it has actually been cut, so there is a deficiency, and kids have not been able to get into it. But the other one, I'm just trying to understand if it's considered an emergency.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Clark, you, throughout the whole session, and rightly so, has asked for accountability. And bioscience was promoted as something that's going to produce all these jobs for us. And this program proposes $500,000 for Bioscience Alliance for industry analysis, bioscience business development, marketing promotion, and company technical assistance. The Alliance will retain 10% of the grant processing and monitoring. So it does exactly what you've been asking for. It is a missing piece in bioscience. And we can do all the research in the world, and it doesn't do us a bit of good until we put that research in the marketplace and have people get jobs and people produce products that the nation as well as the state of Minnesota needs.
I think the rationale otherwise, Representative Clark, would be that if you have passed appropriations that we've appropriated for, and we need some language to be able to effectuate those appropriations, that that would be something that would be considered underneath this bill, and I think this fits that criteria.
Mr. Chairman, I think you're going to reach in here. This is the appropriation here. This doesn't have the accountability language. I wish it did. It just talks about turning the money over to this organization. If it did have some accountability language, which actually I presume will be maybe in our, maybe that'll be in our jobs bill, which I think we're getting back in the committee. Is that right, Representative? I was just asking you, we'll be getting that jobs bill that could have the accountability language back in the jobs committee. Is that right?
It's my understanding that we are going to take almost all your initiatives for accountability and put them in a policy bill that we're working on presently.
Okay. I'll be looking for that, Mr. Chairman.
Other discussion. Representative Rokovina.
Mr. Chair, members, you know, I look at this bill, and it disturbs me, and let me tell you why, because maybe somebody can correct me and refresh my memory, but I believe we came in early, was it early last session or this session, and we had to give all of our corrections a bunch of money because there was an underestimation of the amount of people we were throwing in jail.
Wasn't this session, Representative?
The beginning of last year to balance the previous biennium's budget. Am I correct?
I think there was a deficiency bill in early 2005. Yes.
And most of the money there right away went to corrections. And I look at this bill and I see out of $88 million of general fund, 88.9 general fund money being spent, I see $73 million going to imprison mentally ill and dangerous or sex offenders or to pay the salaries of the people that protect them. $73 million going to our criminal system, and then the rest are veterans, our kids, our families that need, our college students, vulnerable adults, the elderly, and people in nursing homes, our farmers, everybody else gets a meager amount. Now, Mr. Chair and members, I don't know, are there that many more sex offenders and dangerous mentally ill? Or how come every year we get here in this committee and corrections comes in and gets the bulk of our money and they're off by 35, 40 million bucks? Can somebody from corrections come down and tell me? Because, you know, when our superintendent was off by a couple million bucks in Virginia, we finally had to get rid of him for underestimating the amount of students we're going to lose. And this has gone on now 2 or 3 years in a row, and you look out there, I mean, tell me what's going on in this state. And I tell you the truth, members, I am glad that I have not voted for a criminal justice finance bill since my first year in the legislature, because I've seen what we do every year around here. We take the education bill is this thick, and job bill is this thick, and the crime bill is this thick because we've made everybody criminals. Now, I cannot believe that we can be off by this much. And I cannot believe that this state, when we're here and we're going to spend $88 million, $73 million of it's going to criminals and the people that take care of them. Something better be done around here because this is getting out of control.
Well, a couple of things. Let me just, before you want to answer.
I want to know how people can be off this much every year.
Okay, let me just, before you ask Commissioner Benson, let me just make two other notes. First of all, this is, of course, a supplemental budget bill. We're on a two-year budget here. We provided large increases of roughly $2 billion over the previous biennium last year in the regular budget bill, and so we have put some additional large amounts of money into a lot of different areas, education, health and human services, a wide variety of the areas you referenced, Representative Rukavina. Secondly, Representative Rukavina, you can't just look at the $88 million minus the $73 million, because there are quite a few other areas in here where there are other savings and offsets. This bill probably really spends in the area of $130 to $135 million netted off against the TANF refinancing and some other savings that are in the bill. Representative, let's see, let me ask, if you wish, you can, let's do this by Representative Bradley.
Yeah, to the point, okay. Representative Rupert, I'm not saying this will help at all, but just so we at least direct it the right place, virtually all this money is actually Department of Human Services, because we're talking about civil commitment of people who are mentally ill and dangerous or sexual predators. And I think as a body, we've basically said, after some of the incidents we've had in our society, that we want to protect the society from very dangerous people, and these are dangerous people. I mean, you may still ask the same question, but I suspect that almost all this money is actually the Department of Human Services dealing with people that are being civilly committed.
Maybe then I've got the wrong people. It's dealing with somebody from Human Services.
Well, actually, you do have somebody.
Would one of the witnesses like to state their name for the record and... respond to Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm
Commissioner Benson.
And, Deputy Commissioner for Corrections, and I'll speak to our portion of it. And with all due respect, Representative Rukavina, this agency is simply responding for the most part to sentencing enhancements, of which this agency has little or no control over. For the past 17 years, there have been somewhere around 100 sentencing enhancements that are bringing more and more people to prison. Our daily cost for incarcerating offenders is actually going down. So it isn't as though we're charging more money to lock people up. The daily cost is going down. We have zero control over our growth. We are responding to the courts, we are responding to sentencing enhancements, and we are responding to a larger state population as well. So our piece of this bill is about $13 million, and that's a supplemental budget request that is for contractual increases that were not part of the budget bill last year. We let our committee chairs know that this was coming last year, and I can tell you next year there's going to be another one. The utilities costs of running our 10 institutions is about $4 million underfunded. Our health care costs for managing the health care costs of our prison population is going to be about $3 million underfunded next year. So if the policymakers continue to make the decision to lock up more and more people, corrections is going to tell you what it's going to cost every year, and we're going to have to pay for it. And I'm not saying that that's bad policy, but the reality is the Department of Corrections population has doubled in the last 11 years, and obviously that's going to cost more money. We're still incarcerating fewer people per capita than any state in the union except Maine, so I think we're doing a good job of saving those expensive prison beds for those people that we really need to lock up, but there are simply more of them coming to prison, and it's going to cost more money. That's sort of the way it works, and I'm not trying to be smart here, but the reality is we aren't going out rounding up people. We are no longer part of a parole system. It's all driven by sentencing guidelines. So in terms of corrections being responsible for the increased costs, we're simply delivering the invoice each year, and it costs more money if we're going to continue to lock more people up. And some of those drivers, like health care, exacerbate that amount. Contractual increases also increase that amount. But it simply costs more money.
Mr. Tesner, is it?
Yes. Mr. Chair. My name is Mike Kessner. I'm the Chief Executive for State Operated Services, Department of Human Services. And I can speak to the increased costs for the mentally ill and dangerous population and the sex offenders and the salary supplement page. Not unlike corrections, these people are coming through court action. People with mental illness who have an episode of violence, whether they injure someone or not, can be subjected to being civilly committed as mentally ill and dangerous. 3 years ago, we used to see a net growth per year in that program of 5. At present, we're seeing 25 net growth per year. So it's 5 times higher than it was 3 years ago. The Minnesota Sex Offender Program likewise serves persons who are civilly committed as sexually dangerous persons or sexual psychopathic personalities. 3 years ago, the growth rate of that program was 15 to 18 per year. Today, it's 58 per year. We don't have control over who the courts are committing to us. They commit, and we have to open our door and admit them. Likewise, we don't control the back door. Unlike corrections where there's a definitive sentence where the person serves and then they're out, persons civilly committed as mentally ill and dangerous or sexual psychopathic personalities, sexually dangerous persons, are indeterminately committed, which means the release process is out of the control of the treatment team. It's an administrative and legal release process. So these folks have to have demonstrated proficiency in treatment. There has to be a marked reduction in the dangers to the society before they're released. The drivers here are the admissions. That's essentially what's going up. The other piece is the salary supplement page. It's driven by contractual arrangements with our employees, and we have an obligation to meet that.
Well,
Representative Rokavina.
And I can appreciate that, gentlemen. I'm not upset with you. I'm upset with, I think, some of my colleagues that don't understand what they do with these enhancements, as you call them. And I think because of other enhancements, we may enhance your facilities even with more people. But, you know, Commissioner Benson, Ely came down to Ely School District one day, and they told me the cost to heat their schools went up $25 a kid. They didn't get any extra money for that from us. So the criminals can have nice heated buildings and the kids got a shiver. You know? And salary supplements, members, we tell everybody, I don't, you know, that truck driver is just as necessary to me as the guy in your prisons for the safety of my constituents. And we've laid off, we've gone from 600 people in our district up north with Representative Huntley and me and Solberg are, to under 400 people. They got clerks they pull out of the office to plow the roads when it gets bad. And they don't get a salary supplement. And they got a pretty damn dangerous job. You know, I'll tell you, you people keep enhancing things like you are. And pretty soon we're going to be spending billions and billions they'll be coming in here every year. You know, once in a while, maybe we should take a step back, and I don't need to blame the lawyers in the legislature, because I like a lot of the lawyers. I like Representative Abrams, a good friend of mine. We got any other lawyers on here? Representative Smith is a dear friend of mine. But, you know, when there's 40 lawyers in this place, out of 201 of us, it frightens me sometimes when they start enhancing things for the public. So, you know, I'm just disappointed that out of... $88 million, $73 million is going to our criminal justice system.
Representative Krenke.
I just wanted to remind Representative Rukavina that he voted today to enhance Carl Polad's net worth. So.
Well, I know how much that's going to cost. And even if the ball players get enhanced a little bit in their salaries, we still know what the dollar amount is.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, the alternative to putting them in prison is that every legislature takes home a couple of sex offenders. And,
okay. I'd be delighted to. It'd be entertaining.
Be careful, Representative Rukavina. Mr. Kessner is still in attendance. You guys can get together afterwards and make arrangements. All right. Any other discussion to the bill? Representative Clark.
And I was just realizing that there's something that we didn't quite take care of in here, and I don't know. I guess we could do it in our jobs, but that's where it was. We were dealing with the food stamp issue, and I know that's where a lot of this money came from for the Biobusiness Alliance, and I mean it must be where it came from. And the Mayo University I don't know, collaborative. Those dollars, I guess, were taken away from the what we'd originally done with them, which was some youth programs. But what we don't have in here is the food stamp change that we were able to bring $2 to $3 million into Minnesota by dealing with putting a domestic violence brochure in the hands of a lot of folks who are getting food stamps. So I guess what I would like to say is we can do that in another bill separately if you want. I just realize it's not that part is in here. You did deal with the one part that just transfers the dollars out of, you know, the excess dollars out. But there was another provision, and I didn't notice that it was missing until just now. So I think, I mean, if you want, we can do that on the floor, or we can do it in the other, you know, in the policy bill. But I don't think you want to miss that. That actually does fit under your criteria of federal money that would be missed if we don't do it.
Representative Clark, let me tell you, we did talk about that issue, and I would say that's an oversight on my part, and I would be happy to talk to you further about that. I don't know if we want to bring an amendment to this bill on the floor on it, but we can work on getting that done. That was an oversight on my part.
Okay.
Other discussion? See no discussion. All in favor of House File 4162, as amended, being recommended to pass and referred to the General Register, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The bill is passed. And members, the meeting is adjourned.
All right.